The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest is Greg Giddens. Greg is the Principal Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to this discussion. We're going to talk a lot about VA procurement operations. But to set the stage, can you provide the listeners a little bit about your background and how long you've worked in this crazy world of government procurement?
Absolutely. I started off at Robins Air Force Base in Warner Robins, Georgia, as an electrical engineer. I actually started as a co-op student, going to school a quarter and working a quarter. Back in those days, we were on the quarter system. It was a little bit
That's
ago.
A long, long time
that
ago,
That was
Greg.
A long,
you're
long...
You're dating yourself
long,
there, man.
A long, long time ago. So started up working at a depot and working in logistics and supply chain procurement engineering. I had an opportunity to move to Wright-Patterson and did some acquisition program management work there. Had the ability to come to the Pentagon. Worked there for 2 or 3 years, Hanscom Air Force Base in program management.
I worked up there, too.
It was really had a great experience there. Worked for some really wonderful, talented leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a great experience. Winters were pretty tough up at Hanscom.
For a Southern boy.
For a Georgia boy, they were pretty tough.
Yeah.
And then had an opportunity to come back to D.C. and work for the Coast Guard, which was a great experience to work in another cabinet agency. At that point, we were under Department of Transportation. Was working there during 9/11, and we shifted over to Department of Homeland Security. Another opportunity to kind of see how the government at large works and organizational issues that come about as you kind of rub things together. And then had several opportunities there working at headquarters, also at Homeland Security and at Customs and Border Protection. And in 2010, I got a call from Scott Gould, who was the then Deputy Secretary at the VA, about a potential opportunity at the VA. And coming over and talking to Scott and some other folks about the VA and really learning more about the mission just was something I could not say no to.
Yeah, well, it's a noble way to serve, to support your veterans, the veterans, and their health care and all their needs. This is vitally important, obviously. So I want to talk today a lot about procurement and what you guys are doing and what your vision is. But I think the best way to start that in talking to you before the show is that let's start with the MyVA, Putting Veterans First plan that Secretary McDonald and the leadership at the VA have put together to improve operations of the VA nationwide throughout the organization. And that sort of sets the framework for what you're trying to do in acquisition. So why don't you talk a little bit about MyVA?
Great. And Roger, absolutely right. It does really set the context for us. And as I go out and meet with procurement and acquisition professionals, I really take the time to go in and talk about MyVA because it does set that context. We can't look at our functional activity or our support services in isolation. We really need to understand and align where the organization is going. As you said, when Secretary McDonald came in, he did work with the senior leadership and put together the MyVA initiative about putting veterans first and put five aspects of that. The lead one being we need to improve the veteran experience. We need to focus on the veteran experience. We need to think about outside in. So we're leveraging elements like design thinking. So that when we're engaging in an activity that's going to interface with the veteran, we start thinking about it from their perspective. Most organizations start inside out, but he's leading us on a path that we think about things outside in. So how do we start with that veteran experience and think about the VA from their view? The next part of the MyVA is improving the employee experience. The Secretary sent us to look at a lot of different companies. We did a lot of research about companies that are good at customer service and customer experience. And one thing they had in common is they did really well with the employee experience. And in fact, some told us they could not reach the level of customer experience that they did until they improved their employee experience. And so we're really focused on how do we improve the employee experience, how do we use our FEV scores and our all-employee surveys and interim surveys that we're doing internally to really understand how to improve that employee experience and really how to engage our workforce. The Secretary started us on a leadership development effort that we're doing across the VA for all levels of leadership called Leaders Developing Leaders, where we gather and as leaders kind of rehone and take a step back and remember that we are leaders and managers in the organization.
So I have a quick question. Sure. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know, on the employee and the surveys and when you're doing, when you guys are doing that, are you looking, I mean, you know, what you ask or your information you're seeking from, you know, the medical staff versus the procurement staff? I mean, are these things kind of tailored or focused on part of the operation?
Right, the FEV survey is not that focused. That's the federal.
I see a general
enterprise.
One across, right?
So it's a general cross, but then below that, because that's a 1-year survey, and to make the improvements on the cycle time that the secretary and the deputy have us on, a 1-year sample is, trust me, that's not the cycle times they're running on.
Right.
So we're doing some internal sampling. Looking at different functional groups and organizations so that we can really understand what's happening down in the organization. The VA is a large organization, 350,000 or so people.
Yeah.
So you can't have a monolithic solution that applies to everything, except there's some themes about if we engage employees, things improve, not just their experience, but performance improves.
Yeah,
and that's one of the key parts of our Leaders Developing Leaders is helping us understand how do we engage employees, reignite the passion they had that probably drove them or brought them to the VA in the beginning. How do we reignite that and get them really back to being active and engaged?
Right. And my other question real quick, and I think it's picking right up on what you just said, is that to me, you know, when people look at the my, you know, I was thinking about what you're saying about in the My VA plan and the, you know, tagline sort of, or the, you know, the message, the fundamental putting veterans first. And, you know, I think some could say, well, of course, that's what the VA does, right? That's their job.
Right.
But I think it's powerful to just put it out there and as part of the, you know, I mean, the fundamental message everywhere you look, when you look at the My VA, it's got putting veterans first. I think that, I mean, that sends a message, and I think and it's maybe the message that's always been there, but to put it out there, I think makes a big difference for employees.
I think you're right. Putting it out there makes it visible, and it really helps us remind ourselves why we're here. Because I'll tell you, if you're sitting particularly in a support function, and one of the third My VA pillar is how do we improve our support services. You know, if you're a nurse, if you're a clinician, if you're someone in VBA working on a claim, you have that first degree of separation between the veteran, or if you're in the clinical room with the veteran, you are right there. So it's, I think, a little easier to think about putting the veteran first in that environment. If you're doing a support function and you're sitting back in an office and you don't get the ability to experience firsthand with the veteran, thinking about putting the veterans first helps us remember really why we're here. Because if you're sitting in a QB farm and you're processing paperwork, sometimes you'll get so funneled in that the paperwork really becomes important. And the paperwork is not the end. It's a means to an end. The end is serving that veteran. So really, how do we make sure that we allow people and encourage them and enable them to see the work they're doing in light of the veteran that's going to be served by it? I believe that's very powerful for our workforce and will allow us then to take tools like Lean and work to continuously improve our process.
Right.
Because we do have some issues and we're owning those and we're getting better. And it's not a one trick solution.
Right. And you mentioned, you just mentioned that is the fourth pillar is continuous performance improvement.
Right.
And that's Lean.
Absolutely. Lean is one of the tools that we're standardizing on, because what we found is sometimes a veteran gets lost in the seams of our organization. That's probably no surprise to some people. So if we have a common tool like Lean, we can come to an issue or problem and make that issue or problem not about the organization, but about the veteran and about the process. So we can look at the process in more of a neutral aspect and say, okay, here's the flow of what we're doing and how it serves and connects with veterans. What can we do with the process? It's not your organization's bad or my organization's bad. Let's look at the process and improve and smooth the process out. And that's been a powerful tool. I love it because you don't have to go to a 3-week class to figure out how to do this. You get the people involved in doing the work together, get them in a room with some wall space, put up some butcher paper and some markers, and in a day or two, they'll figure it out.
Right, and I assume, having worked in the government myself or any big organization, you know, the folks who are doing the day-to-day operational, like whether it's the paperwork or the back office, they sit there and they know I'm doing this thing, and man, I just, it's like, if you give them a chance to say, well, you know, there's a different way to do this.
Right.
Right. You'll find all kinds of savings and efficiencies.
Right. If you open them up and encourage them and say, hey, we need your ideas. And one of the concepts of Lean is nothing about me without me. So if you're going to change a process with Lean, you have to get the people involved to do it. You're right. They'll come in and a lot of times they'll already know the solution.
Yeah.
But they've just been looking for a way.
Nobody's really asked them, right?
Right. Yeah. And to some degree, you know, maybe they brought that up 5 years ago, 7 years ago, and people said, hey, you know, we're not really interested in new ideas, you know, head down and turn the crank.
Yeah.
That's not where we are now. And it's really refreshing when people come in and see that really their voice is really expected to help us move forward.
Well, Greg, we do have to take our first break. My guest today is Greg Giddens. He's a Principal Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And when we come back, there's one more pillar to go, the strategic partnerships. I'm looking forward to that conversation. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Greg Giddens. He is a Principal Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I almost put in there the Office of Acquisition Logistics and Construction. And that's the last time I'll do that, just because that is very long, right? That'll take, you know, the whole segment. Almost, right?
I have an 8.5 by 11 business card.
Right, that's right. Yeah, I used to have one of those. We have one more of the pillars to talk about a little bit, and that's the strategic partnerships.
Sure, absolutely. One of the things when the secretary and the deputy were working on the MyVA, we looked at, with their guidance, what can we do to help engage others in this mission? Because what we found out is the VA, while our core mission is to serve those that have borne the battle and their widows and orphans, families, beneficiaries, we're not the only ones that have a passion for serving veterans. And to a degree, at some point, organization, we got to be a little isolated and want to kind of put our arms around that mission and say, we really own this mission. Well, we do own that mission, but there's opportunities to engage with others that have a passion for serving veterans. And there's some things that we can't do for veterans from authority and appropriations perspective that other organizations can come in and help fill that gap. So it's been really encouraging to see non-governmental organizations, state and local, and others really come out and us collectively look for opportunities to team together.
Right. Yeah. That's it's we're all in this together, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So
there's a lot of need.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. That is for sure. You put this in place for a while. The secretary has, and you guys have been working on it. Can you talk a little bit about progress and some successes you're seeing?
Sure, because there's certainly some things that we're seeing. And I want to be clear: we still have a lot of work ahead of us. We're not done yet, but we are at a point where if we take a quick glance behind us, we can see some wake happening, and things are moving. And in fact, last fiscal year, we completed 5 million more appointments relative to veterans and healthcare than we did the year before. This year, we're on track. We'll probably break that again. In fact, last March, we did a record 5.3 million appointments inside the VA. And what that means in terms of access for our veterans, 97% of our appointments are now completed within 30 days of when the veteran's preferred date is. 86 of those are completed within 7 days, and 22% of those are same-day appointments. So from an access perspective, we can really see that we're making improvements. If you think about it in terms of wait time for care, particularly for primary care, that's 5 days is what the average is to get an appointment, 6 days for specialty care, and 2 days for mental health.
Well, you know what? I have to tell you, I'm going to stop you right there and say, you know, I'm just like on personal experience on our own family. Like when we go to the doctor, you're like, you call the doctor, like, I need an appointment. I'm in my physical or whatever.
Right.
It's like, let me look at the calendar here, and it's like 60 days later or whatever. I mean, that's not atypical. That is typical,
I think. Right, yeah, and we have the same, and we hear that, sure, too, in the private marketplace. These numbers are pretty good.
Yeah, that's
but
impressive.
We're not done, as I said before, but we are making improvements. We're also working hard in the IT area. Laverne Council has been great at helping us move forward on leveraging IT, whether that's looking at mobile apps so that veterans can schedule with a mobile app and not have to worry about even calling in to schedule appointments. We've had about 2 million telehealth visits. That's serving almost 700,000 veterans.
Wow. And
so in some cases, you don't need that face-to-face encounter, but you need to make a connection. So we have secure messaging, and we have secure video teleconferencing. Secure imaging, so we can take an image in one place and send it to the national specialist on that, so that the veteran doesn't have to travel and make that journey.
Right.
We have a lot of progress continuing in the National Cemetery Administration for 5 years running. They've been ranked number one in customer satisfaction. Same for our mail order pharmacy. J.D. Powers ranks, I think, 6 years running, has ranked them high. I mentioned earlier about claims, and that's one of the places, you know, if you're working on a claim, you can see that first connection with the veteran.
Sure.
Wasn't that long ago, we had over 600,000 claims in backlog, and now that's down to around 70,000 or so. Again, more work to do, but we made a lot of progress.
And that claims, personnel perspective, you know, working
that's
with
from
the employees.
That's the disability claims.
Right, but I'm just talking what the strategy for reducing that backlog.
Well, VBA did a tremendous job at really stepping back and understanding there need to be process changes, technology changes,
yes,
and people changes in terms of training and experiences. And they really did, you could do a case study on how they work change management through that, addressing all of those and flowing that in and tracking the numbers and seeing the results of that work. It's been really tremendous to watch that happen.
Right. That's like, you know, that's where you're going, exactly where I was curious. It's an integrated effort. It's the personnel.
Right.
It's actually the administrative processes, and it's IT. It's
exactly
all those things working together to try to address that.
Absolutely. And those kind of activities led us to think about, while the MyVA pillars we think are enduring, I think it's, you can look at those five and they're good.
Yeah.
But then how do we make those even more real in the near term? And we established 12 breakthrough initiatives. 8 of those are internally facing to the veteran, things like looking at our call centers, providing a unified experience for veterans. 4 of those are more internally focused, you know, from our employee experience. How do we continue to leverage improvements in IT, staffing? And one of those is supply chain management. I have the great opportunity and honor to lead that for the department. And it's really encouraging to see the work that we're doing on that. Sloan Gibson is our executive sponsor. Right. As a deputy, we meet with him.
Impressive guy. Yeah.
Yes, he is. He is absolutely. And so, we're making progress, which, you know, the more that we understand that progress, the more that we can understand the support function like procurement and others and how they feed in to support it.
Yeah. So why don't we, you know, that's a great segue. Be doing this side of it.
I could not do what you do.
Let's start talking about supply chain and procurement operations, you know, your areas of responsibility. And, you know, my first question for you, just open it up, say, so you came to the VA, you came to this your current position. You know, what did you see and what were your, you know, where did you see opportunities, challenges? And I'm always interested, what surprised you? And that's like a multiple part question, I know. I apologize for that.
Wow, I should have made a note for those. I'll start with the last one because that's the one, the freshest one. I remember. What surprised me most was the untapped potential. And as I've gone around and met and visited not just the folks within OALC involved in acquisition procurement, but as a chief acquisition officer, I have the great opportunity to look at this across the department and help be an advocate and proponent for the enterprise. What I found is we don't have a people problem. We have a process and system problem. We have great leaders. We have great people. But they're working in a bureaucracy that really is not working for them. And they become, to a degree, looking at the bureaucracy as something that they have to get around in order to do their work that's not helping them do their work. And to a degree, as they work through that, you know, it gets back to that employee experience and engagement, they really start to see that bureaucracy in a very, very negative way. And they start not to own their work, which is one of the principles that I've tried to lay out for us in the community. In a way to help people realize they have to own their work. They have to take ownership of that. And if the bureaucracy is getting in the way, then we need to start to peel that back. Bureaucracy itself's not bad. That's a way to structure and organize and
there's bureaucracy everywhere.
Right. There's bureaucracies everywhere. You get more than a handful of people together, you're going to wind up with a bureaucracy. The trick is how to leverage that bureaucracy to help us get work done.
Sure. So, you know, with regard to the procurement operations, you know, it's we got about a minute left in this segment, and maybe we could just start, you know, the untapped potential. It sounds like that was a big surprise, but also it's a big challenge, right?
Yes, and an opportunity.
All three things.
All three of those.
So in that regard, Can you talk a little bit? We can start and go into the next segment. Is like, so your sort of vision for the VA's procurement operations, right, logistics operations. What's your goal? What are you looking to get? Where are you looking to go?
My goal is for us to be in that procurement role as that really trusted business advisor for our internal customers, helping understand what they're trying to do and be their advisors to make the right business deal for the VA and industry to accomplish the mission to allow us to better serve the veterans.
You know, and on that, well, that's a good way to take the break. So when we come back, I'll be talking more to Greg Giddens. He's the Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs, Office of Acquisition, Logistics, and Construction. There, I did it again. And when we come back, you mentioned owning your work. We can talk about industry engagement, you know, community collaboration. And I want to spend a lot of time talking to you. I've heard you use the term many, many, many times, or the phrase is many, many times, or the statement, I don't know the right way, going from a rules-based procurement approach to a principle-based procurements, and how important that is. It's a great direction in line for folks to keep in mind when they're doing their procurement. So you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Greg Giddens. Greg is the Principal Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And, you know, we're turning the focus of our discussion now to the nuts and bolts a little bit of procurement and, you know, and Greg's area of responsibility, sort of implementing those, you know, MyVA, putting veterans first pillars and initiatives and goals and all that thing in your particular part of the organization. And, you know, one of the things that I've heard you talk about a lot, and I think it's a great message and it's a great sort of management message to employees and operational dynamic. And that is going from a rules-based procurement approach to a principle-based procurement approach. So I'm going to, you know, what does that mean?
I do think that's a critical part for us, and it's cultural change as well as behavior change. And as I talked about earlier, we certainly have our issues in the VA, and we've got work to do, and we've got a lot of stakeholders that will point out the issues where we fall short. And to a degree, that level of oversight starts to get people not just to be risk averse, but to just avoid any kind of risk. And so what we typically do on that is if you find an issue, you set another level of review in, or you have two more levels of review, or you remove that decision authority versus looking at that particular issue and say, oh, okay, what happened here? Was this a training issue? Or in some cases, you know, we, with the best intent, with the information we have at time, will make a decision that 3-6 months from now we would go, that's probably not the best decision. But as I go around and talk about rules-based and how we need to move from rules-based to principles-based, I tell people we're not in the business to prevent any procurement action being done that's a bad procurement action, right? If we were in the business to prevent any bad procurement action from being done, we just wouldn't do any procurement actions.
Hence
no bad ones, right? But that's not – so we're in business to help make good things happen. And with that, there's going to be some risk that you will make some decisions that in hindsight won't turn out to be the best. And we need to be agile enough and be humble enough to recognize that so that we can change. I want to be clear when I say not be rules-based. I'm not talking about not follow the law.
Right.
Because I've had a lot of people come and say, hey, I got a long list of FAR changes, and we need to – the FAR is not our problem. What we have burdened in addition to the FAR with our internal procedures and policies and manuals and reviews is really where we've got to drive at, and then pushing those decisions down to the appropriate level. And understanding what's the principle that we're after. We're trying to understand a requirement, make a good business deal that's not bad for industry and not bad for us, fair and reasonable, but put that together so that we can serve veterans.
Right. You know, and I mean, that is a great insight that it's, you know, the FAR isn't necessarily, although as a lawyer, I would say, you know, the FAR is filled with stuff that you described, like, oh, we screwed this up and did this way. Oh, we'll create a rule to address that.
Right.
So there is some stuff that could be getting, but ultimately it's not. It's more. It's even more, the underlying layering of additional processes and reviews or whatever to meet the requirement, the rules of the FAR.
You're absolutely right. And at some point, you know, maybe we'll get to where we look at the FAR and try to recommend some changes. But I've tried to get us to resist trying to make changes in somebody else's backyard. We ought to look at what we can do, start where we are, and do what we can, and show that we can make improvements before we go looking to somebody else to improve their lines.
Right. And in that regard, is, you know, as part of this, you're looking at it too, I think, I don't know if it's really a principle, but, you know, there's objective measures versus, you know, how are you looking at outcomes in the context of, you know, the procurement operations?
So we certainly want to measure our cycle times because one of our principles is speed matters. And so getting our decisioning process to be supportive of our internal customers when they have needs that they're trying to accomplish so that they can better serve veterans, we want to measure our timeliness. We also want to move to make sure that we're trying to measure and understand, do we have the right outcome of the business deal? We can put a contract in place and maybe it takes 30 days or 60 days or 90, whatever we want to measure the timeline is based on the type of action it is. But in the end, did we put a good business deal together that gets the outcome that our internal customers are after as they're looking to support veterans? And so those are a little tougher, right? As you know, you can set up activity measures and output measures. Outcome measures are always the toughest to do.
Right.
So we're trying to start and make sure that we're measuring our activity and our output as we work with our customers on how do we understand really the outcome measures.
So you and people who don't work in this procurement world, I don't appreciate this, but you and your operations you're the connection between the contractors, the suppliers of the product or service or pharmaceutical to support the veterans, and actual ultimate customer, which is, you know, the veteran, the ultimate customer, and then those who are serving the veterans directly. You know, that's a challenging place to be because you have the pushes of pull of both sides.
Yes. It's a little bit like being the meat in the middle of the sandwich.
That's right. So, and how are you navigating that? You talked about the customer side, and you know, it would be great to get everybody in the room for once, right? Just to talk. Well, representatives of everybody.
You're right. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do is to focus on how do we improve that linkage by not just thinking internally, but how do we leverage a better relationship with industry? One of the things that I heard when I got in this job very clearly from industry, and frankly, the coalition has been a great partner in working with us on this. We heard from several groups, and I heard from individuals. The VA is not very robust in their communication with industry. And so that's one of the principles that we've laid out is we want to improve that industry engagement. Because, Roger, just like you said, we're really trying to link these two together. We're trying to link somebody that has a need, that has a requirement in order for us to better serve veterans. And we got somebody that can supply that need. So we're kind of in that middle trying to make that good business deal, try to understand enough about the requirement and enough about the industry and the market that we can put a good business deal together. And you're right, we get better when we really collaborate with everybody in the room, and with the industry in the room, with procurement professionals in the room, and then requiring agencies, the offices that really are running the business lines, getting them in the room. Because in the end, it is about serving veterans. And I got it, private industry, their shareholders and stock numbers and ratios that have to be managed. And I got that. And industry making money is not a bad thing. But it needs to be done relative to, are we doing what's good for veterans, good for taxpayers, right? It's got to be good value, and are we setting up our employees to be able to have the right experience for them while they're serving veterans?
Right, and just to say, you know, there's been a dramatic sort of re-engagement by the VA under your leadership, and the communication's been very robust, and we appreciate those opportunities because at the end, we're all in this together, and at the end of the day, it is supporting our veterans. And I will say, you know, my conversations with, you know, companies is, you know, they are, you know, obviously they're in business to make money, but there's a commitment to this market that, you know, it also reflects the commitment to those who, you know, have served our country too. I think there's a piece of that there.
There is.
I think in most government contractors, especially the traditional ones who've been in, you know, supporting the federal government as in total throughout their careers, my experience, having been in this world now for 30 years, is that there's an element, there's obviously the business imperative and dynamic, but there's also, you know, a service to a certain extent. I don't know how else to say, if I say that articulately or not. So I want to ask you something. One of the things that you've talked about, too, is less procurement and more ordering. What does that mean?
So one of the things that we found is looking at some stats about our business is we are very transactional. Average transaction around 70, 72,000 across the VA. And what we find is we're ordering a lot of things differently and by the eaches. So, for example, if it's in the medical community or benefits or any of our organizations, we're really looking individually at the market. And we try to talk about if we were in the business world and the private industry world, organizations, I'll use Costco, for example.
Those
big organizations, they don't buy by the eaches. If they're going to buy TVs, for example, for the retail, they buy wholesale and then they distribute retail. We buy retail. We buy ones and two at a time. And one of the great things that the deputy has helped us think about on the supply chain management initiative is how do we get out of that more procuring environment, procure the right vehicles to set up the right structures, and then have ordering officers out in the field be able to pull down on that in a very streamlined, IT-enabled manner where they don't have to decide which is the right kind of even a bandage. Do I need the kind that's got microbacterial protection? How much absorbency? Let's go through the right process to understand the requirement and get the right elements on contract and just let them draw down from that, almost in kind of an Amazon-like experience, to go online, look at the catalog, and then pull that down. And that frees us then to think about some of the more tricky and more complex acquisitions. We can free up some resources to really be more thoughtful on those because we're not so transactional. And I think we'll get better value. If we leverage our spend and go to the market, I think we'll get better value for taxpayers.
So, yeah, and, you know, that what you described, and we do have to take a break in just a second. Well, so maybe, but what you just described, you know, the ordering the Band-Aid, you know, the person ordering the Band-Aid in themselves is probably not the one making decision anyway on what the appropriate bandage in that situation, right? Or are they refilling stock at a hospital?
They could be refilling stock. They could be using their local purchase card. So, it's a plethora of options that are out there. And Sloan keeps telling us we have to learn to think and act like an enterprise. And that plays out in supply chain management really huge.
Right. Well, you know what, Greg, we have to take our last break. My guest today is Greg Giddens. He is the Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these VA acquisition principles that he's established. There are 10 of them. We won't cover all 10, but we can talk about some of the key ones that are supporting, you know, the transformation of your operations. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Greg Giddens. He is the Executive Director and Acting Chief Acquisition Officer for the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Office of Acquisition, Logistics, and Construction. And Greg, I know you guys have put in place some acquisition principles. I mean, going back to the, you know, rules-based versus principles-based approach to acquisition. So let's talk about some of those principles this segment.
Sure. And one of the things that we tried to do, I signed the memo out last December, was to while we listed some specific principles, we also wanted to lay in the context about the expectation of initiative. We really want the acquisition procurement workforce to be empowered and understand they're expected to use initiative to help get the job done. So if they're looking at something and it's not prohibitively expressed that you can't do it in the FAR or the law, the reg, and again, I'm talking about the law.
Right, and it says thou shall not.
Right. So then really we need to take the initiative to find then a way to do that, balancing out what's good for veterans and taxpayers and employees. But we did list out a 10 or so of those, and we started with we're going to deal with integrity, fairness, and openness. We're going to be transparent. We're going to act with integrity. We're going to stand behind our work. Another one is good requirements make good contracts. What we found is some of the times, and we've heard this feedback from industry, is sometimes our requirements when they come out, they're really not that clear. And what that, I believe, not forces, but encourages industry to reasonably do is to have more risk in their proposals than they might otherwise have. So we really want to work with program offices to help build more competency in how we write and articulate good requirements. Right. I think that's good for us. It's good for industry. It gives us better solutions.
Right. You're absolutely right. That is a risk issue. And, you know, the requirement's not clear. You know, the companies factor in the risk and what that, what does that mean? And, you know, it is, to me, the fundamental principle of government procurement is sound requirements result in sound outcomes, good positive outcomes for the ultimate customer.
I couldn't say it better myself. That was excellent. That's what we're after. Of course, speed. That's one of the things that we really want to focus on. You know, we're finding in our federal world and the budget world turns, you know, it's a 2 or 3 year process, but we're finding veterans' decisions, their cycle time is much quicker. You know, we have to find a way to be responsive as an organization to veterans and the decisions that they're making.
Right. And, you know, that's an interesting thought. And you, you know, one of the things to me, too, is our, just to segue, is that, you know, our fiscal process, our, you know, on the annual fiscal, I mean, that doesn't provide as much structural flexibility as there could be. And maybe there's opportunities, I don't expect you to address it, but maybe there's opportunities to address that to provide greater flexibility to be able to meet those cycle, the actual cycle time that the veteran has, right?
And we've
I think they've tried to do, Congress has tried to do something.
We have, and we've working and NBA, we've proposed some ideas recently that we believe some added structural flexibility would help us in meeting the needs of veterans, because their cycle times, they're much quicker than what we are currently seeing with our budgetary process.
Sure, absolutely.
Another principle is we want to push decision-making down to the lowest appropriate level, and this even links back to owning our work. What we found is if you layer in a lot of reviews and pull decisions way up, the person submitting the initial effort, they're looking upstream and going, there's going to be six more people look at this. I'll put in an okay package, and you know these six people review it, and it'll get better and better at each turn. And we're finding that the last person that gets in and looks at it and goes, hey, there's been six people that's already looked at this. Surely they would have found anything in here that wasn't right. So I'm going to, right. So now really who owns that?
Right.
So those layers.
No one.
Right. No one. And that's the problem. So really, how do you push that down? Not in a way that we want people not to be successful. We want to enable them and help them make good decisions. And we want to make sure they know we will stand behind them, with them, in front of them when they make a rational, reasoned decision based on the information they have. And in hindsight, it turns out not to be the best decision. Right? This is not an issue about fraud and people. This is an issue about making good decision-making timely so that we can move forward. And if we move forward and decide, well, we needed to shift a little to the left, great. Then let's shift a little bit to the left. But let's don't get caught up in analysis paralysis and not do anything.
Right. That's the, you know, if we talked in one of the earlier segments, that's part of that process issue, right?
Right.
There's people,
exactly.
Process, and the
absolutely.
IT system.
So look at that process, because, you know, headquarters, and I've worked in four cabinet agencies, and while they're all different, they're all the same. Headquarters likes to pull decisions up. They don't like to push decisions down. So naturally, those things get pulled up. And so we've taken some very specific efforts to try to push those decision making back down to the organization to the most appropriate level. Competition certainly is one of our principles. We think competition is really for our default strategy. We also want to leverage the commercial marketplace. There's not much that we do in the VA that you can't find out in the commercial marketplace.
Right.
Of course, we think we have a lot of innovations that we've done. And in fact, we did the first implantable cardiac pacemaker, the first liver transplant, first nicotine patch. There's lots of firsts that the VA has done that has national impacts for medicine and healthcare. But in truth, we are doing things that you can find in the commercial marketplace. So the more that we can leverage of what's out commercially and not have unique VA one-ofs, we think the better we can leverage the market. And of course, there's policy objectives out that we need to be aware of and we need to meet as well.
Right. Well, I want to pick up on that policy objectives. And you know, the recent Supreme Court decision with regard to Kingdomware, and you know, there's the specific statutory provision that the VA has for its procurement operations with regard to setting aside contracts for service-disabled veteran-owned companies and veteran-owned companies. You know, and I understand, you know, there is a policy that's been recently issued or guidance, I guess, for VA contracting folks. Can you talk about where you are and what your views on that is?
Sure. So let me first just be clear. We are going to fully implement the spirit and intent of the Supreme Court ruling with Kingdomware. It is a shift for us, and so we're having to change and do some internal policy, and we will work through the formal rulemaking, but that's a longer process, and we need to make change now so that we can implement the ruling from the Supreme Court. And we've sent out an interim policy internally. We'll have another one out either today or Monday that continues to move us forward. We will not get everything right in this initial policy that's even coming out now. We'll get that out, and we'll find some things that, you know, so there'll be some cases and some eaches that we didn't think about in the flow, and we've got a team that's going to be working across the VA to address that. But the ruling was very clear, and we're standing up and moving forward on implementing that. And I think we've done a good job so far at reaching out to procurement community. We're actually having some industry engagement and do some webinars to talk to industry and let them know what we're doing and get some feedback and questions from industry. It's a change for us, but it's a change. Again, we're going to take that and again, with our guidance about what's good for veterans, what's good for taxpayers and employees, we'll find that high road on how we're going to implement Kingdomware to meet the full intent.
Right. And, you know, just for me, it's like fascinating. It's just amazing that a government contracts case of that type actually made it to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Interesting. So we get, you know, the community got some publicity that way just in general. But also, I mean, I think, you know, and yeah, I don't know if you want to respond to this or not, but it just seems to me what one of the the people forget or understand how big the VA is and how, you know, diverse and just spread out the operations are. So we really are talking about, you know, the cliche, you know, turning an ocean liner,
yes,
right? And so it's a huge challenge internally to implement this court's decision.
Right. Even in the procurement function across the department, we have 3,500, 4,000 procurement professionals. And it also impacts program offices. One of the things, market research that we need to do to help us. Again, that gets back to the requirement. The better you know your requirement, the better you can do market research and make better determinations about eligibility and applicability of small veteran-owned businesses to meet that need. So you're right, it is. And again, we won't get everything right, and there'll be some things that, again, we'll look back and say, well, we could have made a different decision. But I have full faith and confidence the team is moving forward with great intent and great structure to make those decisions. And in the case where we look back and say, well, the market research either wasn't clear or we leaned the wrong way or we had a person that was gone on leave when the training happened and we didn't follow up with them, then great. Then we'll correct that and then we'll move forward.
Yeah, this is the last question. We're almost up, and it's sort of more, and I think it is about principles and just, you know, in looking at the 10 principles, you can see how they're all interrelated, right? They have to tie together. And I just want to get your thought on this. Just, you know, for example, like good requirements. Well, that enhances competition. That will increase the speed, right? Competition comes from the commercial marketplace, and there's a focus here on using commercial products. You can see the vision, how they all tie together. I don't know if you have a final thought.
No, I'm glad you saw that. That was with a little intent. So I appreciate you pointing that out. Because just as these principles link together and work together, that's how the procurement community has to do as well. We have to link together. We have to work together. We have to collaborate and depend on each other, depend on our internal customers as they're working on their mission requirements. We have to work with industry as they're looking to better understand those to give us better proposals. The procurement acquisition is not a solo sport. It is definitely a team effort. Just like these principles are a team effort, working together, support each other. That's how we have to operate for acquisition and procurement.
Right. Well, Greg, hey, thanks for coming on the show. It was great. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
I want to thank my guest today, Greg Giddens. He is a Principal Executive Director and an Acting Chief Acquisition Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.